Thank you for listening.
3, 2, 1.
Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition. We made it all the way to the weekend, people. And you know what? I'm feeling awfully good for the happy hour. Dominic's joined. There's Dominic. How you doing, little buddy?
Hey, Crudy. I'm good. A little tired, man. It's been a long week, a long night last night. And hell, I haven't worked a full week in like 2 weeks. So, you know, 5 days of this, man, is quite a bit. But I am revved up, ready to go.
What say you haven't worked a full week in two lifetimes? I'm sorry, I didn't hear the metrics. And we got the hardest working guy in radio, the host of his own fine shows, Morning Cannolis with James Antel, former U.S. attorney. Tune in right here on the Shaw on Devil Radio, 9 to 11 on Saturday. But we're going to steal all the best content right now. Jim Santel, welcome to the big show.
Hey, Jim.
Stealing content is what America is all about, after all. Thrilled to be with you this afternoon, as always, Mike and Dom.
Well, we've also promised the callers, if they be a little patient, we'll get to them. But before we do, at 844-967-2789, because lots of people are fully engaged with what happened, the January 6th hearings last night. And I thought that's all we were going to talk about. And I didn't even prepare for today's show. Just watched it, a little Fox News, took a couple notes. That's it. No reading. And then the Michael Gableman thing happened a little bit earlier today. I'd forgotten. Gableman was pressed into testifying mostly about open records. Stuff that, you know, he'd been accused of, let's just say, deleting and destroying public records. And he's supposed to be the special prosecutor. You know, the guy looking into the election irregularities, the guy trying to enforce subpoenas and testimony from others. That guy went into a Dane County courthouse at the, you know, at the boot of a judge today and acted like a petulant little kid and basically refused to answer any questions, was held in contempt of court, and, you know, took his ball and went home, Jim. How does that work? Why is Gableman not in the clink a la Navarro right now?
Let me just read here quickly, Jim, bear with me, from the Journal Sentinel, a quote from Gableman while he was on the stand to the judge. "You don't have a right to act as an advocate for one party over another. I want personal counsel. If you are putting jail on the table, I want a personal attorney to represent me. I will not answer any more questions. You want to put me in jail, Judge Remington? I am not going to be railroaded." Contempt. Jim, your thoughts.
There are two portions of this, right? There is a portion that is laughably ridiculous. And we've talked about that for the last, 2.5 years or so. Huge numbers of pounds, amounts of money being spent on this investigation for which there is no there. The absurdity just continues. But the serious part of this today, and I think it is a part of a larger scheme, a larger plan that we've also talked about, is the contempt, quite literally the capital C, for all the fundamental institutions of our nation, right? When you are called into a court and you're placed under oath, you can invoke certain privileges and certain rights under the Fifth Amendment, for example, not to speak in a way that will tend to incriminate you. But on these kinds of questions that do not raise any privilege, do not raise those, we don't think there's a criminal exposure here. The notion that a former Supreme Court justice should speak to a sitting judge who's asking legitimate questions in a legitimate piece of litigation, a legitimate proceeding today for the interests of advancing justice, and talking that way, responding that way, most appropriately should be held in contempt. My greater concern, of course, is it's a part of this larger scheme to suggest to all Americans that the institutions of government are not real. They're not to be respected. And that could include voting mechanisms, that can include judges, that can include legislatures, and you're okay simply to disregard them and to thumb your nose at a Judge Remington or anybody else in government who seems to be on the opposite side. That's the greater concern about today's story.
You can't handle the truth, James Santel. You know, it was very boisterous from the reporting we see at the Journal Sentinel. It was probably unnecessary. I mean, he could have just... I mean, as you point out, these weren't criminal allegations against him. They're asking about public records he continues to destroy. Here's a quick quote. If I had to keep every scrap of paper, I would do nothing else. I would need a warehouse. To get a freaking warehouse. Or maybe convert the documents over to, you know, whatever. But that's still your obligation. Isn't it ironic? Here's my point. The very same guy that would try to level the hammer on anyone that didn't want to go down to the liposuction clinic in Brookfield and give testimony before Gableman and his unlicensed lawyer team, if they didn't honor his subpoena, he wanted mayors thrown in jail. Now he goes to open court and gives the judge the middle finger. How do I get to act like that in court?
His hypocrisy is over the top, as you plainly note. It always has been. And it also, again, underscores this notion that the Republicans placed in charge of an illegitimate investigation to begin with, someone who plainly doesn't understand, as he himself said, doesn't understand how voting works, how elections work, and apparently from today's performance, today's appearance in court, doesn't even understand how courts work. How absurd is that? Somebody used to be in our highest court in our state and plainly doesn't understand the authority and the obligation of judges to preside over proceedings, make decisions, and yes, when it's appropriate, find that there are witnesses who are in contempt for failure to abide by the rules and regulations, the orders of court. He may not understand that either, or at least he's reporting not to understand that either. And that's perhaps even the more damning allegation against him. He may know, and yet he may still be behaving in this way.
Just a little bit more on this Gableman issue from the General Sentinel. Gableman's testimony was ordered by Judge Remington in one of three lawsuits filed by the liberal group American Oversight seeking public records related to the review of the 2020 election from Gableman and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss here in Wisconsin. That particular liberal group, American Oversight, has a statement out today, and I'd like to read that to our audience. Mr. Gableman's outrageous and disrespectful conduct in court today removed any last shred of credibility from this partisan charade. Far from increasing transparency and instilling greater confidence in the 2020 elections, by repeatedly flouting Wisconsin's transparency laws, Mr. Gableman and Speaker Voss have shamed their offices and undermined their own investigation. The OSC, like Speaker Voss and the Assembly before it, is now in contempt of court for refusing to comply with the law and release records to the public. The OSC has truly, as Judge Bailey Wren stated last month, run amok. Jim, is there anything we can do to shut this thing down? Is this going to take public pressure? Speaker Voss, I mean, what else can be done? This is a joke.
What else can,
it's an embarrassment,
right,
and a waste of money.
What else can be done? I mean, right. So we have the head of this investigation held in contempt today. And even though we don't normally think about jailing somebody, that is plainly a remedy. If you fail to purge yourself of that contempt, even civilly, that can happen as well. You would certainly hope that even among Americans, even people in the state of Wisconsin who are simply headline readers, when you see that a sitting Wisconsin Circuit Court judge has found this person in contempt, you would like to think that you would sit down at your dinner table tonight and say, well, gee, maybe I need to begin to rethink my thoughts about the legitimacy of what he's doing and the legitimacy of this person who's in charge of this completely frivolous and badly inspired investigation from the very start. I think all of us, all three of us here, have some continuing faith in America, understand it. If you read nothing but that headline, we should hope that our residents look at that and say, there is something fundamentally wrong here. Even if before I supported that, now, this has got to come to an end.
James Santel, our fine guest. Jim, tomorrow, my son's got a graduation party. I'm serving thick, slathered pork ribs, and I hope all the guests think of Michael Gableman. 844-967-2789. We're not getting to all the callers right now, but before we turn to the J6 conversation, and Eric, you are first from Lodi, so I appreciate you hanging in there, man. One last electoral question from Wisconsin. Tim Michaels, apparently he's on the ballot. The Democratic Party or the Citizens Challenge to his signatures and the addresses. It was an oversight. And I guess the intent and the will of Wisconsin is Tim Michaels is on the ballot.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Tim Michaels is. And my understanding, our pal Mark Thompson was basically saying, hey, why don't you guys look at this? Because, you know, he was throwing this at their feet, saying if we went by the absolute letter of the law, quote unquote, that you would have us do in all these other cases, you know, Michaels wouldn't be on the ballot is my takeaway from this.
And all these kinds of things, you know, there are arguments, I would say, not in both directions, but there are legitimate reasons for some of what seem to be maybe hyper-technical lawyer kinds of things when it comes to signatures. All of them ultimately are intended to support and convey the notion that the people who signed off on these ballots here, these signatures here, that all of them are real, that they are in the appropriate jurisdiction, and that they've got the authority to do so. And so that is, Mike, I think you got it just right. That is the overall kind of Wisconsin approach on this. We want to make certain that people are in fact on the ballots who should be there. Perhaps we shouldn't be hyper-technical, but there's a reason for the technicalities. And if indeed their address is missing, if there are other irregularities, that's the thing that we should be concerned about. Even as we look through with all of these signatures with great specificity, who is signing them and how it is that these people are getting on the ballot. It is a good thing for people to run for office. We should promote that. But there's got to be some balance in both directions.
You know, I think we should send Karkdahl and Gableman down to the nursing homes to verify every signature on Tim Michaels' ballot. You know, because some of those people could have been, you know, falsely signed or
coerced, perhaps.
Hell, I think we should throw the Wisconsin Elections Commission in jail for their malfeasance for putting Tim Michaels on the ballot. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. Our fine guest, former U.S. Attorney and talk show host James Santel. Your calls will be next. 844-967-2789.
Repeatedly told the president in no uncertain terms that I did not see evidence of fraud.
The roof is on fire. The roof.
When they go low, we get high.
On fire.
The Devil's Advocates.
The roof.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Happy 420 Friday to us all. Join us on the phones. We want to know what your thoughts were in the Big J6 committee hearing last night, 844-967-2789.
Oh, man, our dude from Lodi dropped. He was patient for like 25 minutes, and now it's his turn, and he didn't get his turn. So, you know, back to the back of the batting order. It's kind of the story of my life. You know, get in line, back of the line. James Santel, our fine guest. Jim, you must have watched the J6 hearings. Did you join Dom at the Roman coin last night, or did you watch him from home?
We can put Dom under oath in the court, which is Devil Radio, and I think he will not be found in contempt. He'll testify that I was with him and a very vigorous, enthusiastic, and focused and intellectually precise group that was watching every minute of it, including the visuals, including Liz Cheney and her opening statement.
Wow, yeah.
Prosecution of Donald Trump.
Now, Jim, last night, the opening statement of Liz Cheney felt like a prosecutor at her best, a well-rehearsed and a prosecutor with a strong case in her back pocket. And she talked about a 7-part plan. I'm like, man, I knew about like 3 parts. I didn't know it was a 7-part plan. Did it come off as effective? At least, I mean, if she was a litigator, that's a hell of an open, isn't it, Jim?
Absolutely. And that is my big takeaway as a former prosecutor and still a litigator out there. So what Liz Cheney did was exactly that. And I don't mean to be flip about this, but if there comes a day when you do, in fact, might get a Merrick Garland Day on Devil Radio and Donald Trump and others are, in fact, indicted, what you heard last night could be used by the assistant U.S. attorney, by the supervisory U.S. attorney, coming out of Liz Cheney's voice, her words, her tone, her temperament, her substance, with a little bit of change, maybe some adjectives and adverbs here and there. That can be your opening statement in your criminal case. Why? What she did was she placed Donald Trump front and center, right in the middle of all of this. She spent a huge amount of time, as they did later on in the presentation, talking about what Donald Trump knew, what was in his mind. And all this testimony that we got from her, admittedly, kind of hearsay in nature, but nonetheless, that's coming up, establishing that Donald Trump was told repeatedly by people like Jason Miller and, yes, Bill Barr and his own daughter, that there's no there, that you lost the election. And why is that important as a prosecution piece? Because it sets everything else up, right? It establishes that everything that Donald Trump was saying at the time, including on the ellipse that day on January 6th, was all fraud. And it animates a charge that, knowing that what the truth was, you purposely went ahead and incited people to engage in criminal behavior, for which 500, 600 of them are now facing and have faced criminal prosecution and conviction. That is an outline of an opening statement for a criminal case, hugely compelling. And I would offer beyond that, that she had just the right temperament. This is, I think, who Liz Cheney is. Sometimes you see lawyers in practice who are quite literally doing the Nikita Khrushchev with the shoe on the table and otherwise being bombastic. She wasn't. She was balanced. She was reasonable. She was right down the middle because she didn't have to be more than that. She simply had to be clear. Her words, as Dom and I were talking last night, they were understandable. They were logical. They were slow enough that even somebody like I could understand what the points were that she was making. And in the end, that was a very compelling, yes, long, but didn't seem that way, did it? Because of what she was setting forth, the intent, the purpose, and then, of course, at the far end, which we'll talk about more, brought back to Donald Trump once again when those witnesses at the very end on tape say, and the impact that those statements had, that Donald Trump said to the world, knowing that there was no there, those are the things that brought me to Washington. Those are the things that prompted that 10 minutes of video that we saw of just horrific attacks upon our capital, upon our nation.
He is James Santel, our fine guest. He probably got stuck with Dominic's bar tab last night at the Roman Coin. Your calls right now at 844-967-2789. Nick from Madison, say hi to Jim Santel.
Hey, Jim Santel, how you doing?
Nick, how are you? Glad to have you with us this afternoon.
Hey, great. I'm glad to be here, too. Hey, I just wanted to clarify, guys. I think it kind of went off the rails then when I got off the phone last night. I think you were saying things, putting things in my mouth that I wasn't saying. So I want to clarify.
You want to relitigate yesterday's phone call, Nick?
All right, man. Go ahead.
Yes, because I think I was, I think you were saying things I wasn't saying.
Well, hurry up with it then, man. Move it. Keep it moving. We got lots of J6 stuff to talk about.
Okay, here we go. Okay. Basically, what I was saying is that I know a lot of people. I'm a conservative. You know, I know a lot of conservative people who absolutely believe that Donald Trump election was stolen from him. I think that's stupid. I've told them that. And what I was saying is that they use the exact same argument that Black Lives Matter rioter apologists use. And here's the thing. The Black Lives Matter riots, first of all, tearing down a business or burning down a business, you're stupid for doing that. But at least there was a grain of truth behind what they were doing. I mean, there actually is a problem with police violence. Trump lost the election. This was a total loss. That's what I was saying.
Okay, because I probably did misunderstand your tone yesterday, Nick. I'll eat a little crow if I misunderstood your tone. I thought effectively what I was hearing, my friend, is that you were basically saying, well, both sides do it. You know, we had our riot, and I know you aren't part of the January 6th, you know, ride or die crew. I know you're not that guy. But like, hey, yeah, it's terrible what they did, but what the Black Lives Matter protesters did was also terrible. And I would say my argument was to proportionality and intent. And I think you've cleaned it up a little bit here, Nick. I think you did a fine job relitigating, sir.
I think we should. And while we're ahead, I did see a headline. Thanks for the call, Nick, that one of the people who started the fire in Kenosha got sentenced. So, yes, people are going to destroy businesses and commit crimes. They should be prosecuted for them. I'm okay with that.
James Santel, can we throw arson onto the many future indictments of the former president? Hold that thought. We'll come right back with the talk show host, former U.S. attorney and friend of the Devil's Advocates. He's James Santel. It's Friday.
The Devil's Advocates, making radio great again.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition. I'm feeling good about it. We got a fine guest. He is James Santel. He is the host of Morning Cannolis with James Santel. Going live again tomorrow morning, 9 to 11, right here on the Shaw and Devil Radio. You're listening right now. You'll stick around. You'll tune in for Jim. Also, Don Brown from Waukesha. Apparently, he's actually mailing it in this week, daughter graduating or something. And Joel Clayfish, our buddy, the hunter and fisherman, will be broadcasting. He's doing it live from the Waukesha Farmers Market tomorrow on the Shaw. So that'll be fun. Raised in the Shaw with Joel Clayfish. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting kind of weekend all the way around. Jim Santel, I got to think it was an interesting night down at Mar-a-Lago last night. Donald Trump probably rant and raving. I hear the Bill Barr testimony, particularly, you know, annoying to the former, but I gotta wonder, what's your opinion? Do you think it's possible that Eric Trump has moved into fourth favored Trump child position this morning?
There are an awful lot of people in the Trump ambit, in the Trump universe, who last night told America that everything we were hearing from Donald Trump's voice and from his podiums during this period of time was false. And as we said before the break, he knew it was false. When your own daughter says, yes, I believe what Bill Barr was saying, and Bill Barr says, I told him that was ridiculous. He actually used a B word. I think the word appeared twice in the hearings last night. Dom, correct me if I'm wrong. Yep. Starts with the D, ends with a T. And our former attorney general used that word to describe the notion that the vote had been skewed and that the election had been stolen. And then we get other people whose names are perhaps less common to Americans, but including, as I said, Jason Miller, the spokesperson, who very, very compellingly said that days after the election, I went to the president and said, you didn't win. You're not going to win. There's nothing you can do about this. All of those people in his ambit, all those West Wingers, all those people in his residence who have plainly at the time understood what the reality is. And again, the fact that Donald Trump, our president, for a few remaining weeks and days, would go out and say just the opposite, it reminded me, recall the situation where Donald Trump also told us in the early days of the pandemic, not such a big deal, this is like the flu. And we know now, because of the recordings of a certain reporter, that at the same time he was saying just the opposite. He was telling Bob Woodward, no, this is serious, people are going to die. This is a bad, bad virus. A complete hypocrite, complete charlatan, and that's among the other great takeaways of last night's production.
Jim, as I was watching, you know, there were so many people in Trump's orbit, as you mentioned, that were basically condemning the ridiculous notion. I was waiting for, like, video of Melania. Like, I told him it was, he lost. You know what I mean? Like, everybody else. It was Jared. It was Ivanka. It was everyone but the doorman at Trump Tower.
It was across the board. And again, Jared's testimony talking about the White House counsel, who was complaining about the likelihood of he's going to resign if all this misbehavior, some of it relates to a big lie, some of which was not. But again, underscoring what we all knew for two reasons. One is we got glimpses of it from good reporting that these things were happening. And then we could also extrapolate without too much difficulty to figure out that, yes, that's the mayhem, the meltdown lack of competence, the meltdown lack of basic professionalism, and I would offer the lack of understanding once again about how government works. We lived with that for 4 years. If there's anything, again, a lesson to take, not just from last night, but all these continuing revelations, America, we can't go back to that again. We're going to have an election again. We can't go back to that.
Jim, discussion, Jared Kushner's videotaped testimony last night. Well, you know, I wasn't really paying attention because I was busy working on the pardons. Leads me to a couple of quick questions. A, is it possible that immunity was granted to any of these witnesses? I'm thinking of like Jared and Ivanka by the January 6th committee. And B, The pardons. Is it possible that Jared and Ivanka, hell, maybe Scott Perry, I heard his name mentioned as a party and someone asking for a pardon, which to my understanding means they're confessing to a crime. But is it possible there's hundreds of pocket pardons floating around, and as soon as these people are charged, they say, here's my get out of jail free card signed by the former president?
It is possible only because the Constitution is so very, very limited in what it says about that. It basically says the president can grant them, almost certainly not to himself, but that's another issue. The reasons why I'm so skeptical about the pocket pardons being out there is you still have a process, and you need to those have to land somewhere before Donald Trump left office. Presumably they're at the
office. They landed on Jared's desk, apparently.
They could well be. And again, it's entirely possible, given the history, the story of the last 4 years, everything that we think is incredible and impossible becomes a possibility and a reality. That's the concern. And so is it possible it's out there? Yes, I'd still like to think that somehow there were the civil servants of the Department of Justice who said, you know what, there is still a process here, and we've got to capture these in a way that makes sense. The other part of this, of course, is if there were some grants of immunity made, again, I'd be highly skeptical of that just because the lawyers on Capitol Hill are bright enough to know that they need to be thoughtful about what happens down the street at 9th and Constitution. You grant immunity, admittedly can be very limited for congressional testimony. You're also going to be opening up the door for them to argue that when it comes to immunities in a grand jury proceeding that Merrick Garland and the criminal division may be pursuing prosecutions down that street at Main Justice, those could also be invoked. And so my sense is, to put a sort of practical gloss on this, highly unlikely that the committee would grant immunities to a witness, even to testify just in this forum, without in some way conferring with the U.S. Department of Justice, especially since we now know, after the last week's news coming out of Navarro and others, that the Department of Justice is in fact pursuing that high-level investigation of the Trump folks, others at the Willard Hotel. We know that's going on. I am skeptical of it being out there, but once again, I have been skeptical before, and lo and behold, it comes true. So with that significant footnote and caveat, that's a perspective on pardons and also immunity grants.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. That is our good friend, James Santel, former U.S. Attorney. Jim, great to see you last night. Thanks for coming out. You are a cheap date. It was awesome to hang out. Make it dawn less cheap, but it was fun to have everybody out and watch this. And it was, you know, we paid attention, and it was enthralling. It literally was. I thought it was produced very well. And I really appreciated the fact that they came out with Bill Barr as their number one witness, or at least, you know, first a video, and him saying this is all BS. And they followed that up with a brief cut from daughter Ivanka. I think there needs to be more from those two witnesses, and hopefully they'll disperse more as they come out and as this goes on. But some reporting on this today, Jim, apparently Jeffrey Rosen, the acting attorney general, after Barr resigned, he is going to testify along with Rich Donahue, the deputy attorney general, and Steve Engel, the head of the Office of Legal Counsel, all going to testify next week. So these are those civil servants at DOJ, at Main Justice, Jim. What's your expectation from those witnesses?
Right. And my only regret, of course, is a lot of that takes place at 10 a.m. and in the morning when it's not in prime time, when people are appropriately in America working, doing other things.
Come on, baby. That's radio prime time. That's a great time for it.
That's it. That's right. And that's the beauty of tape, right? We can play those kinds of things. I think the Rosen testimony can be, and it's overstated, but bombshell-like. Why? Because Rosen, obviously this fellow, summoned to the White House at least a couple of times between the election and January 20th, coming up with this plan, various described by Clark and others, to basically have Clark become the attorney general, let the president do what he needs to do, let the Congress declare that, in fact, that this should go back to the states, and significantly, asking the U.S. Department of Justice, as the match that's lit to begin this entire process, if the U.S. Department of Justice will simply say that there are irregularities, something was wrong with the election, that's what he asked Rosen to do. Rosen, acting attorney general after Bill Barr, says, no, Mr. President, I will not do that, as do the others. And oh, by the way, if you go down this road, we're all going to resign and take this all with us.
They're just being whiny, Jim, according to Jared Kushner. I just perceive that as the lawyers being whiny.
Right, right. And again, I'm very sorry, Jared, but this is a constitutional matter. It may sound whiny to you, but it is not. It is a very, very big deal. If the U.S. Department of Justice, and again, there have been some dark days in the past, but if the U.S. Department of Justice, from the mouth of the Attorney General, is saying something that, once again, the Attorney General knows not to be true, and it's for the purpose of promoting a political end, namely keeping a president in place who is not, in fact, elected under the Constitution by the people of the United States of America, if that's what was about to happen, and apparently we came close to doing it, but for the fact, like a now we observe him as a patriot named Rosen says, no, I'm not going to let that happen. We could have come, Jared, very close to the demise of our basic institutions. And that's why this is so very important. That's why the testimony will be significant next week.
Well, and once Rosen, after Barr left, the acting attorney general said, no, we're not going to do that several times. Then what? Trump came up with the idea, well, let's replace Rosen with Jeffrey Clark, this mid-level environmental prosecutor. I mean, and the whole thing, what a disaster. We talked about this in real time as it was
happening. I prefer the term loyalist.
Exactly. So, and then of course, once that all went down, then the White House attorney said they would resign, and so what? Trump backed off it, but that did not mean that intent was not there. And if intent is a big part of the equation, certainly that is there. Our intent is to get to our fine phone calls at 844-967-2789. We'll start with Joe from Madison. Welcome, Joe. What do you got for us?
Thanks for this spirited discussion, James. I'm just to start off one question from you, and then I had some comments on the. On the January 6th investigation, first off, any chance that you're going to be doing a podcast of your shows on Saturday?
Oh, there'll be podcasts. Oh, yeah. We'll make them widely available for great people like you.
Excellent. Happy listener here. A couple things.
Thank you so much.
You have been doing such a great job talking about the intent and how this is shown and Liz Cheney's elegant way of leading this discussion. From a legal point of view, I want to say from a TV point of view, I thought this was an amazing piece of television. One of the comments that has been circulating around is, oh, they're going to glitz it up. They've hired a TV producer. It's going to look like Hollywood. It's going to look like the Oscars. And, you know, it's just a showboat kind of thing. I thought this was the absolute antithesis of showboat, starting with Bernie Thompson, speaking of his hometown, I think it was Bolton, and is saying that he still lived there, that was still where his ties were. So he came in with that very specific thing and then went to Liz Cheney talking about this big national issue. I thought those contrasts were really well. And I thought it was really interesting that she used for the example, setting up the example of you have to give up the presidency, that very, very old portrait of George Washington handing over his presidency when it's done. I mean, not glitzy, not done with special graphics. It was a cut in of a portrait. I thought it was interesting that the clips of the individuals that they had, whether it be Jared Kushner or Bill Barr, none of them were very, very long. They were quite short and really clipped off until we got to the footage of the attack. And then that, by contrast, went full bore for a long time. We were immersed in it, absolutely immersed in it. But we weren't immersed in it to such a degree that when we came back to the woman who was the police officer who was describing, I mean, I couldn't believe how powerful it was to hear from an individual just looking at the camera saying, I was slipping in the blood of my comrades. I mean, that is, a television producer couldn't come up with a line like that. That came from her heart. And to have the format to be able to say that was pretty, pretty remarkable. I thought it was, you know, there. As a lawyer, I'm sure you have to think about where things are played, and this is being played on a national stage. How do you present the evidence? How do you tell the story? I thought it was very, very interesting. I'd be curious about your reaction to the visual side of it.
Right. Joe, absolutely, and I cannot concur more in everything that you said. And that is not to say that we were watching theater last night. That cheapens it, right? When you have, as you just indicated, someone like Officer Caroline Edwards talking about how she is her grandfather's granddaughter, history of protecting America, that is the kind of witness that Hollywood cannot cast, right? And then to be able to tell her story about being pushed over, her head slamming against the concrete steps and getting up and further defending America. That is not glitz. That is not theater. And again, I couldn't agree with you more. It is the kind of thing, frankly, that we think about all the time when presenting a compelling case to a jury. Following up, Joe, on your comments, I would suggest to you that the jury is America and well received last night.
Or a U.S. Capitol sized nothing burger, as they called it on Fox News. More Devils. More James Intel. We'll be right back.
Stand back and stand by.
The Devil's Advocates. Sausage making never looked so good.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines open. Going to them next at 844-967-2789. Just want to say a couple of things quickly to Joe's point, our last caller. Thank you, Joe. When Benny Thompson talked about where he was from, the small town in Mississippi or down south somewhere, he went on to discuss and talk about the racism that they dealt with. And I think that was a big lead into, you know, talking about the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and that whole kind of thing to be addressed. So I thought that was a very important little tell as well about where this thing's going to go. And regarding Rosen, the acting AG who will testify next week, Wednesday, my understanding, Donald Trump told Rosen what? Just tell the people that the election was corrupt and leave it up to me. That's going to be, we're going to get the background and the details of that particular conversation that's been reported in the news over the last year or so. So stay tuned for that.
Any comments, Jim? I'll give you a minute.
Sure, and that's exactly right. So Rosen, I has said this in the past, or presumably repeat this again now, he simply wanted that his former president wanted Rosen to say, we have found irregularities that suggest that there are improprieties in election. For that reason, again, this Eastman memorandum kicks into place, should go back to the states. Again, with the cooperation of the vice president, we'll be able to overturn the legitimate election. All a part of that process that the Department of Justice would have nothing to do with. And that's why, again, shutting down all of these possibilities and making very clear once again that Donald Trump, as Judge Carter found, again, revoked last night by Liz Cheney, engaged in criminal behavior here to incite a riot, to incite insurrection, to overthrow the government of the United States of America. That's no small thing.
Jim Sentell, you'll be encouraged to know the American people, and I've just seen the overnight ratings, the American people, this was a huge rating success, if that is a metric. Fox News, that did not play this real-time coverage. In fact, Tucker Carlson, during the course of his show, they didn't play commercials just so the uninformed Fox News viewer might not flip during the commercial. They would rather burn revenue, rather burn cash. But Fox News got smoked last night. 20 million people watched on the network TV, 4.1 million people watched on MSNBC, 2.6 million people were watching on the CNN, and there goes Fox News, 3 million total people in their two primetime leading the nation shows on cable news. That was a very bad night for Fox News. The American people did care about what happened last night.
And they also heard one of the most telling things that Liz Cheney said near the end. She said, speaking to her fellow Republicans and those people out there who might believe the big lie to this day, we all recall those words. There will come a time when Donald Trump is gone, but your dishonor will remain. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Just chilling. And that's the lesson of the night. On a partisan side, it should be a lesson to America also, as I said before, about the impossibility of returning that presidency once again to the White House. We can't go down that road once again.
Well, hate to hang the Scarlet Sea on him, but here's Gary from Sussex, one of our conservative friends. Say hi to James Santel, Gary.
Hi, Jim. I listen to you all the time. Not that I agree with you, but you are well informed. All right, I got a couple of comments to make. First of all, I did watch some of it last night because I was one of
the. How much is some, Gary?
Oh, maybe about half an hour or so. I'm the one
at the beginning or the end?
Kind of in the middle type thing. I'm one of the Fox people that did not watch Fox because I turned on to watch the production. You know, they're going to win an Emmy, you know, for television. All right. But the point that I'm making is I never heard anybody or the words of Donald Trump say to go out and riot. I heard him say, march down to the Capitol and peacefully protest and let them know what's going on. He never said the word riot.
He also said fight like hell, Gary. Remember that part?
And he also sent out a tweet saying it'd be wild. Come on down to D.C.
They also suggested that hanging Mike Pence would be something he deserved, Gary. That's the testimony.
Dom, let me just finish once here, and then you guys can respond and ask me questions, too, and I'll do the best I can. He said, go down to the Capitol peacefully. Okay, so, and I understand you guys are terrified. I know Mike is terrified of Donald Trump running again, and the only way you can do it is get a felony on him so he can't run. You got to be careful. You know, you're wishing something. You got to be careful what you wish for.
Well, Gary, the last time I was terrified, it was watching you climb that ladder on Brady Street when I was giving live commentary because I thought I'd have to report that Gary splatted on the street, man. I don't get scared that easy. I'm not afraid of Trump.
Gary, I mean, do you not believe in the premise that this was an organized coup? You haven't seen any evidence of that yet? And what would it take for you to acknowledge that?
There are a million people there, and you get 500 or 100 or 200 or whatever it is, Proud Boys out there. They're going to cause problems. And
what did Trump do for 187 minutes, Gary, while those people were trashing the Capitol? Don't you want to know that?
I know what he was doing. He's probably hiding in the closet, not knowing what to do, peeing
or
himself.
Cheering them on. Because they were his people, Gary. You know where he wasn't? He wasn't in the Black Lives Matter bunker, buddy. You know what I mean? When the Black Lives Matter protesters came, they had armed guards out there. They had the president in the bunker because he was scared. So anyway,
let me offer another. In addition, I concur entirely with my colleagues here, Dom and Mike, about the compelling nature from all sides written. It's tweets. It is testimony. It is visuals. It is a compelling case. It's a direct evidence case. Let me also suggest to you this. To the extent that you indicated early on, I didn't hear Donald Trump say, go overthrow the government. Did not use those special words. The reality is that in any prosecution, a criminal prosecution, as evidence is presented, you very seldom have a bank robber saying, I am now robbing a bank. I am now engaging in methamphetamine transmission. I'm engaging now in sex trafficking. That doesn't happen. How do you prove cases? How do you cognitively understand what happens? It's not just circumstantial evidence. It is all the direct compelling evidence from people who saw you, who watched your behavior, who watched your language, even without those special words that you may be looking for. And that's how cases are built.
Well, you think that's true, that people don't go out and admit crimes publicly? But you see Navarro on Ari Melber that one day?
Okay, he did. And let's not forget that Donald Trump also, again, regularized this. He looks at the NBC anchor and he says, yeah, I fired the FBI director because of that Russia thing. He is admitting on the air to Lester Holt that he committed the crime of obstruction of justice. That is one of those situations where you do have a direct admission. It very seldom happens. More likely you have with things we just talked about, which are all these pieces from a compelling sides of the world that lead you to the result that in fact this person engaged in exactly the kind of behavior that we say he did.
James Santel, leave him wanting more. Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel, 9 to 11 on the Shaw on Devil Radio. Thanks, Jim. We'll tune in tomorrow.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen. We'll see you tomorrow morning.
Thanks, Jim.
But regardless of recommendation, I was going to fire Comey, knowing there was no good time to do it. And in fact, when I decided to just do it, I said to myself, I said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story. It's an excuse by the Democrats for having lost an election that they should have won.
I'm scared, Daddy. Too scared to even wet my pants.